reading from the letter to the Hebrews. Every high priest had been taken out of mankind, is appointed to act for men in their relations with God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sin. And so he can sympathize with those who are ignorant or uncertain, because he too lives in the limitations of weakness. That is why he has to make sin offerings for himself as well as for the people. No one takes his honor on himself, but each one is called by God, as Aaron was. Nor did Christ give himself the glory of becoming high priest, but he had it from the one who said to him, "You are my son, today I have become your father." In another text, "You are a priest of the order of Melchizedek, and forever." During his life on earth, he offered up prayer and entreaty aloud and in silent tears to one who had the power to save him out of death. He submitted so humbly that his prayer was heard. Though he was son, he learnt to obey through suffering. Having been made perfect, he became, for all who obey him, the source of eternal salvation, was acclaimed by God with the title of High Priest of the Order of Melchizedek. And this is the word of the Lord. In the parish in Glasgow, where I am currently parish priest, there are three large multi-story buildings built in the 60s. And the lifts are rather small. Like many 60s multi-story buildings, high-rise flats, whatever you call these enormous machines for living in, the lifts are actually too small for coffins. Seems to me that's more than simply an oversight. It says a lot about a culture that they could build houses which are rather inhuman in many ways, very unsuitable for young families, and very unsuitable for the dead. The bodies have to be taken down in bags in the lift and then put into coffins at the bottom. Again and again in our culture we see that somehow we forget that simple fact. Everyone dies. They grow old and they die. Recently there's talk of abolishing retirement age, which is much to say for it, but it's interesting how much of the language is people can now carry on working as long as they want. Well, presumably they may want to live forever, but they won't, so they can't carry on working as long as they want. Everyone dies. And everything in our life is shaped by that. It's the form of our life. It's why we have school, university, at some point we leave, we work, might have children, we grow old, we die. When a society goes wrong, it goes wrong by forgetting that fact. It forgets it in many different ways. Sometimes they believe they can overcome death by the creation of society, it will last forever. Other times they simply retreat into themselves. Fear shrinks us into ourselves. It's a curious paradox of the ancient world that the one culture which seemed to be quite clear that there was no survival after death was, of all cultures, ancient Israel. Gradually come to a belief in the resurrection. It's witnessed to by what Mary says to Mary, the sister of Martha, says to Christ, "I believe that he will rise again at the resurrection," meaning Lazarus. And Jesus says, "I am the resurrection." Many other cultures, in fact, did believe in life after death, but a very limited life. In the Odyssey, Odysseus goes into the land of the dead, he meets Achilles. All around him, the dead are like twittering, mindless ghosts, shadows. Achilles says, "Better to be the lowliest servant on earth than a king among the dead." This almost reduces the Iliad, the previous great poem of Greek culture, to a sort of nothingness, a pointless emptiness. This is the point. For many cultures, the fear of death is actually not based on the fear of ceasing to exist, rather the fear that they will exist, they will continue. But as dead people, in death, death will be permanent, but real because they are people who exist. The Israelite strange lack of belief in life after death, which appears to be an early text and early thought, was replaced by a belief that there would be a people who would fill the earth, the descendants of Abraham. That's not enough either. That's deceptive. The idea that you can go ahead of yourself and somehow buy in your own people and your own descendants, your own progeny, is a delusion. You can see how they start to question that, why they start to believe in something else. They too start to believe in life after death, like the Greeks, but life after death isn't life. You have to rise again to something more. The death of Moses, who's not allowed to see the promised land. Death of Jeremiah, who's taken away, who prophesies a return to the promised land, but he himself never sees it. Death of the prophets all say something else. They say there must be more than simply a continuance of our people, but not life after death per se, because that's actually just continuance of death. And Christ says something different when he says God is the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. He says he's the God of the living, not the dead. He doesn't mean they exist, because the whole point is, in the ancient world it was quite possible to believe that you could exist after death and still be dead. So what's Christ offering us? First, Christ himself has to be the one who somehow becomes one with all the suffering of the world and all its fear of death, all its sense that death was this inevitable thing which is squeezing life on earth. So the further down we go in our life, it's like walking down a canyon. It gets narrower and narrower. Finally we're stuck. What Christ offers, though, is something more. And the important thing is Christ himself enters into death in all its forms to overcome it. What's offered isn't this life. This life isn't enough. It's not the continuance of this life, it's something more. The risen Christ is not merely alive. He is alive with a new kind of life. It's a life that belongs to him by right, by nature, by what he is, but everyone else by grace. The risen Christ is more than alive, and certainly more than simply someone who existed in death. That's why the descent into hell, however we understand it, and how, despite the fact that there are so few texts referring to it in the Bible, it's actually very central to understanding. Christ plunged into death to come out of death on our behalf. This humanity was a humanity which was shared with all human beings, even in his earthly life, because he shared that experience of having death be coming into our lives, surrounding us, shaping us, forming us, and forcing us to be afraid all the time. The letter to Hebrews says earlier, the devil held us in his power by the fear of death. Christ conquered. And Christ himself is saved from death because its humanity has to be saved from death. It seems to go against everything we believe. He is Lord, he is God incarnate, he is without sin. But we forget the power of sympathy. He's able to sympathize because he is a high priest. What he sympathizes with is that fear of death throughout the world. And Gethsemane is his final identification with all that is human, with all cultures, all thoughts, all fears. And out of that he is saved from death. We've gone beyond Christmas now. We're making our way to Easter. Let us be saved from death. Let us be saved from that fear and that denial, that repression of that sense of death. Let us know we will go through death with Christ to the resurrection, in the life of the world. That's how our creed ends. What we believe in, ultimately, is the life of the world to come.